The audio track you're about to listen to was recorded at LifeStreams Christian Church in South Perth, Western Australia. For more information, please visit our website at www.lifestreamcc.com.
Thank you so much, worship team. That was fantastic. Woo! And tonight I'm really excited to be able to welcome Josh Bond here, who's the director of Sun Life International. And we're going to learn a lot more about that. So welcome, Josh. We can give him a round of applause.
Thank you. I think this is on.
Yeah,
hopefully I don't fall off this stool. Jeez. I'm going to share a quick flashback, if that's okay. It's good to be back here. I haven't been in this church, I reckon, for about a year and a half. But I know you're not supposed to get distracted while you're worshipping, but I did have a flashback. And I saw, I did see Phil Porter here. I was about 10 years old on the edge where I was just standing there, and it was during a youth ministry or youth group days, and I know we're going off topic, but sorry. And I had a football in my hand, and I was kicking it around, and one of the older gentlemen in the church said that we shouldn't be kicking it around. But I had more wisdom, apparently, than that. So I said, you're going to tell me that, are you? I'll show you this. And I went to kick it, and I think I was kicking it to someone like Brett Stanford, and I missed him by about 10 metres, and I took out all the sound equipment across the bench there while I was talking. I was looking at it before, and it used to be the old just one-screen computer. Smashed the computer screen, took out all the sound equipment, and, yeah, so that's my flashback from this evening.
That's great. So you got a bit of history with the church then. And great to have you back.
Thank you.
So tonight, you won't be kicking the footy later. So tonight, I just want you to tell us firstly a bit about your organisation, Sun Life International.
Yeah, great. And thank you for the opportunity. It's always great to be able to share, and particularly with family and people that we have such a long history with. I think as Rod mentioned a couple of years ago, I was an intern here. When I was about 17 or 18 years of age. And so it's really good to be back here to be able to share once again. Sun Life International has been going for about 4 years now, going into its fifth year. It started in 2011. And really what we do is we take the generosity of everyday Aussies through business partnerships, direct donations, and also volunteering and a few other means. And we invest it into the developing world in local initiatives that alleviate poverty. We believe there's four key areas involved with that and four key areas that our partners carry out in various countries, and that's around clean water, education, health, and small business. And the statistics are pretty good now that if you invest in those four key areas and it's led by local people, that there can be some really good change and benefits that come from that. Aside from that, here in Australia, we run a scholarship program for high school students, so year 11 and 12 students. We're the only organisation in Australia that provides scholarships for young high school students to travel with us internationally. So we really believe in investing in young people here that have a heart and a desire to bring about change. So we take one trip each year. We do that because we're very sensitive to overseas travel. And some of the both the potential and also the dangers that can occur when groups of people travel over. So we do one trip a year, where up to four scholarships are given, and then on the back of that we run an internship program. So the students that have travelled and have been through the program, they have the chance to really journey with us, we hope, over the next 15, 20 plus years, which is we believe is really unique, and it's sort of an area that I've become really passionate about. The statistics of people going overseas on sort of your traditional mission trip style, which is definitely changing now, and coming back, the statistics are actually very, very bad in the sense that it doesn't affect long-term change. So we really believe as an organisation we need to be an agent to, you know, sort of shift that direction and ensure that we can give opportunities and skills for young people that will last 20 years, not just, you know, a 2 week or a 1 week trip.
Well, the organisation sounds fantastic. Just a question, what developing countries are you working in
We're active in about 9 countries at the moment. So 2 countries in East Africa, Kenya and Uganda, where we have active initiatives. We have ties and long-term partners in about another 8 countries through that region that I won't include at the moment. But then we're right through sort of that umbrella back to Perth through Southeast Asia. So India, Nepal, Myanmar, Thailand, Indonesia, sort of down that bracket, and then here in Australia.
Yeah, and I've heard that you've recently got back from a trip. Where did you go and what did you do?
Yeah, I was privileged again to head back to Kenya. It was for annual meetings, so it was just a short trip. It was only sort of a week-long trip. It was great to have one of our business partners come with me and a good friend of mine from here who's a chiropractor. And so we just headed over. So really it was about touching base with all the projects. We've got about 20-plus small businesses in Kenya that are owned and operated by people essentially living in poverty. So it was to... not only to continue to build relationship, but also from an accountability point of view. So it's always a very unique to travel. It's hard to describe sometimes what takes place on those trips. Aside from some of the meetings, we just got to hear incredible stories of local people doing things in their communities to be change agents, I guess, in those communities. I'll share 2 quick stories. I've been into a number of large slums over the last 10 or 15 years, and I don't think you can ever get comfortable or familiar in slum settings with some of the... as much as there's kids that are laughing and, just being kids, you see some horrific things. But I had never been in a slum sort of past sunset, and we caught up with a good friend. His name's Charles. He lives in Mathare Valley, which is one of the largest slums in the world now. They estimate it's grown from 500,000 people to close on, the latest sort of census is around just under 1 million people living in 5 square kilometres. So it's pretty tough circumstances. But to stay, we only arrived at the slum at 7 o'clock at night. And so to see it contrasted between the daytime to then where it just becomes very active, people come alive, at night time was really unique. But to walk from one end of the slum, and it is in down in a valley where it's just open sewerage and it's horrible conditions, to walk and to cross the sewerage and walk there at night time and just hear Charles talk about the work that he's doing in the community. He was one of 4 Africans that was chosen by the European Union to represent Africa over at the European Council. He's really got the ears of some of the top presidents and prime ministers in the world, and yet he comes from Mathare slum. He's really a testament to... I know Rod shared in the last couple of weeks about the work of Compassion. He's a sponsor child that's come through Compassion, and one of our partners now. And that's why the investment in education and also child sponsorship can just make such a huge difference. But to spend time with him, he's only, he's young as well. He's 25 years old, and he's chosen specifically, he's turned down scholarships and all these opportunities that have come his way to go back into his slum to change it and make it a better place. So, that's just an evening that you get to spend, and just that time to spend in relationships, really, really unique. Also, I'll just mention quickly, we spent time with a young lady called Leah. She's about 35 years of age. She works in one of the most challenging areas in northern part of Kenya called Turkana. They've suffered drought over the last 30, 40 years on a huge level. Some people are still... We sat and listened to stories of people still walking up to a marathon, over 40 kilometres to collect 20 litres of water to take back. So it's just, it's really hard to comprehend those stories. But Leah, again, is like Charles. She's had an opportunity to come down and be provided with scholarships in Nairobi, which is a very westernised city, lots of technology. She's done her studies there and completed postgrad studies. But she's got such a heart and a burden to go back to her people. So she's been back there for 4 years now. She lives on... less than $1 a day. She's involved with some church planting up there, and she works with really, quite rural tribal people that are still functioning off sort of an older system in really challenging areas. So just to spend time with people like that, and that's really how we work. We work on a relational level, And we want to invest in those sorts of people. So she's doing amazing work up there.
Wow, that's so inspiring. I think it's particularly inspiring when you hear of people coming from such disadvantaged situations and then making such an impact on their community. But it makes me think that being in such a privileged country, we have so much opportunity to help others, and I think you've shown that. So you're a PE teacher. How did you then get into this, or how did you then become a director of an organisation?
Good question. I think it was over a period of a few years where, out of some travel that I was privileged through and fortunate to do, and to go really with no agenda. I didn't go necessarily with an organisation or for a specific purpose. So I think that helped me be, in a way, less biased. I was just interested in hearing people's story, and their stories. So out of that travel, I just became so inspired by what local people were doing in their community. So that just started opening up doors. I was still teaching at the time and became passionate about seeing young people get the opportunity to travel in that manner as well. It happened over a longer period. And I think really taking some risks. I mean, both Felicity and I left full-time jobs. It was really a deep conviction of faith for us. So to sort of step out and take a risk, the amount of doors that opened up, following that was really incredible. So
it sounds like it's that initial step in faith that then opens doors. And you probably need some mentors along the way. Now, I've heard that one of your mentors is Tony Campolo. I don't know a lot about him, actually. So if you can tell us about him and how he's mentored you and maybe some pearls of wisdom that he's given you.
He's getting pretty old now. Who has heard of Tony Campolo? Yeah, a few still. He's a unique character. He's 80 years old now. I was hearing of Catherine's experience in the US, and so I can sort of echo some of that experience. And that really set up the opportunity to spend personal time with him. He's a real different character. To be 80 years of age and still speaking, I think I was sitting in his office one day and his PA and a few people in the office were arguing about the amount of speaking engagements he still had. And they were trying to cut him down from about 350 per year down to sort of 200. And he basically just told him to rack off. So he's just a very gifted individual. So it was great to just spend time with him. But, I guess two things. Not just his age really says something, that he's as busy as ever and he's 80 years of age. So to show that, the older we get, the more that we should be doing and hopefully the bigger influence that we can be having at whatever level that is. So that's something that's really inspired me and really a strong message that he sends. And speaking, I mean, his passion to do with the poor and seeing the church and people that call themselves followers of Jesus, his passion to see them actually interact and make a difference is just grows each day. He's still as passionate as ever. He's non-compromising. He's an individual that's been able to network with presidents, and then the next day he's in a really tough community in, say, Philadelphia in the US. So to have both ends and not compromise on his values, and also to be able to talk to him about some of the challenges that are facing the church, and particularly our age, over the next 10, 20 years. And he would say that consumerism, particularly obviously in the Western world, and also some of the debates, immigration is one that we spoke of, but also the gay and lesbian debate in the church, and the immense opportunity, but also the opportunity to create harm. So to be able to work through some of those issues with him has been insightful.
So you've just talked about some of the kind of issues facing young adults in the church, and I'd just like to know kind of what your take-home message is today. Like, how can we live out our faith in the society today, locally and globally?
It's a great question. I think when I started to be really challenged and take my faith much more on a deeper and personal personal level and really sort of start this journey that I've been on in more recent years. It's very easy to read the Bible and to read the words of Jesus through a middle-class Western frame of thinking. And, I mean, we're very blessed here, even the church, some of the situation, the context that we find ourselves here, although there are challenges in Australia, no doubt, as well. But I think we can really read the Bible and bring... We've almost made up our mind or made up our perception. I was at a communication class last weekend and the guy that was leading the course said that you can speak to people and their convictions are already made up. Now scientists, psychologists and sociologists are saying that by about the age of 8, people have made up their beliefs and value system. So that even while you're speaking to people, they might be nodding or agreeing, but deep down they're saying, you know, they've already made up their mind or their decisions. And I think we can take that same thinking into when we read the words of Jesus and read the stories and read the Bible, we can bring a very much a predominant, for our context here, what we find ourselves in, a sort of a middle-class, comfortable lifestyle and read it through that. And almost hear what we want to hear to feel comfortable. So I'd say that it's just really important to be challenged and to be open and to challenge our inner beliefs and values that we might hold because, you know, a lot of the time we can be wrong.
So I'm talking about like church in certain cultures and for us it is a middle class sort of culture here in South Perth. Have you seen church done differently elsewhere overseas and like what have you admired of those churches and people living out their faith?
I think firstly some of the services go a little bit longer. Been in some services in Africa where it goes 5 or 6 hours, so I guess that's an initial difference. But that's a great thing about travelling is you get to see some of the diversity and just the way that people celebrate. I've gone up into the Turkana region where you know there's over 150 different dialects and so even just hearing them worship and the prayer and the language is, you know, there's such diversity. They don't have church buildings often. They'd meet underneath, you know, traditionally underneath a tree. So just to see sort of that comparison of just the rawness and at about, you know, not having the same material possessions but sharing a common faith, you know, is really inspiring. So... yeah.
That's great. So finally, I guess, like, what can we as a church do or as individuals do to support you and also to get involved in what you're doing?
Yeah, good question. Financially, I'm lucky that I get to travel on the other side quite regularly and I get to see the difference that $10, $20, a couple of thousand dollars, if it's invested into the right areas, I get to see the difference that actually can make. I was with a community in this recent trip to Kenya that received clean water for the first time as a community. And to see how that just changes the whole community. I mean, it's just a basic need that we have of clean water. So, the most direct way is financially. And as I said, I'm lucky that I get to see the difference that makes. But if you're one of the ways that we really raise money and awareness and also partnerships is through businesses. So if you're involved with a business, if it may be a school, it may be a community group, that's another great way you can partner with us. And then also your time. I think we've got this fixed notation that you have to travel overseas to make a difference. And I think we need to start really shifting the way we think about mission. And not reducing it to, you know, a one-week trip or a one-off act, that it's actually ingrained and it becomes part of our life. So, you know, there's a number of ways, even with events or different things that we're involved with here, that you can volunteer your time. You've all got different gifts and talents. You know, it might be in finances, financial management. It might be in leadership. It may be in serving in other ways. So we'd love to speak to you. And to really see how that works out, both locally and overseas.
That's awesome. So it sounds like your organisation does a lot of practical things for people. Have you seen people come to Christ as well through like, I guess through the example of Jesus, you know, he did a lot of practical healing and that sort of thing. Have you got any stories to share about that? Or
Over the last few years with our scholarship program, predominantly the students that we take on those trips, they come from a diversity of schools now. A lot of them don't come from a faith background, so to speak. So I'd say around 90% of the students that go on our trips don't, sort of from really unchurched backgrounds. So it's been excellent to see some of them make decisions as a result of both the trip but working with us in an ongoing way. And then the partners that we work with on the ground are tied into really church leadership and church planning. Sorry, I've been a bit crook the last couple of days. So our partners internationally, a lot of the time, they're the ones in the community. They are the church. And there's just testimony after testimony of not them serving in practical ways, like you said, but, you know, whole villages coming to Christ. And that's a great dichotomy, I guess, or separation that we face here in Australia, even for development work. Is that we want to remove it as far as we can from evangelism, and really the two need to be together. It's a full gospel. You know, the social gospel is both Christ and social acts. So, yeah, we really hear testimonies unfolding really on a daily basis with our local partners, and a lot to do with poverty in really poor countries is not just material deficits or a lacking of material things. In many cases, similar to here in Australia, it is broken relationships, and that's not just with Christ, but that's with others. And it's also a mindset. So really, when we're working in community, we've just, the most recent trip, we did training with about 120 people involved in a community group. We did microfinance training. And they would share the challenges of even when they get extra money circulating in the community, how that can really destroy a community. And they talk about it becomes a poverty mindset, that their mindset and their self-esteem and their outlook can be so low that really it's only Christ and the gospel that actually breaks through those barriers. So yeah, we see it hand in hand, and there's great stories unfolding all the time.
That's amazing. I think I could ask you questions all night, but have you got anything else you'd like to add?
Just to say thank you as a church. I know many of you support us on an individual basis, but also as a church family. You know, you're connected with us where Felicity and I share out of Carawarra, and I know many of you pray you know, regularly for us. So we really do appreciate those prayers, and we really value your partnership. So
that's great. Well, thank you so much for sharing tonight. And I'd like to take this opportunity to pray for Josh, Sun Life, and also for our church. So let's pray. Lord, I just tonight lift up Josh to you, and I lift up the organisation Sun Life International. Lord, I just thank you so much for the amazing work they're doing locally and globally, Lord. And I just pray that as a church we can partner with them to just see, yeah, just more need met in developing countries, but also more people come to know you. Lord, I pray that we'll be a church on fire for you, Lord, and I pray that individually and as a community, Lord, we'll just seek to share your gospel and your word and your love with those around us, Lord. So, yeah, I just really pray that we can get on board financially, Lord, but also pray that we can take a step out in faith as Josh did, Lord, and just see amazing works happen. And Lord, we just see a revival in our community. So yeah, I just pray this in your name. Amen.